Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. It's been a rough week for the association. The investigation into Suns owner Robert Sarver was ugly, confirming a lot of what Baxter Holmes at ESPN had reported last November, and in fact adding a few new appalling chapters to it. Adam Silver, of course, issued Sarver a one-year suspension, $10 million fine. Steep punishment by NBA standards for an owner, but in much of the public's view, and certainly my guests today's view, not nearly severe enough. Wanted to get some added perspective from the player's side, and very pleased to have today Eitan Thomas, who played nearly a decade in the NBA. Eitan now writes for basketballnews.com, as well as The Guardian and some other places. He co-hosts a radio show and podcast with Dave Zirin of The Nation. That's called The Collision. You can go check that out. Eitan's always really thoughtful on these issues. Great insights from him on this whole awful saga. Before we get to that, a quick reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. Hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck. And wanted to once again remind folks, we have a collaboration between Sports Illustrated and Triumph Books, a book about the entire history of the Lakers, 75 years of the Lakers. It's called The Greatest Show on Earth. It's available for pre-order now with a 30% discount. The book's a compilation of 15 stories from the pages of SI from the 60s all the way through to the present. Profiles of all the Laker legends: Magic, Kareem, Kobe, Shaq, Elgin Baylor, Jerry West, everybody, and written by some of the best sports writers ever to grace the pages of SI: Frank DeFord, Gary Smith, Jack McCallum, Phil Taylor, many others, and a foreword by me, which was quite an honor to get to do. You can pre-order the book now with a 30% discount. Go to triumphbooks.com, search for Greatest Show on Earth. There's also a direct link in the summary of this podcast. You can also just type in bit.ly/Lakers75. That will take you straight to the page. When you get to check out, use the discount code Lakers30. If you're a Lakers fan or just a fan of great sports writing, I think you'll love it. Go check it out. Okay, my conversation with Eitan Thomas is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now pleased to welcome to the podcast for the first time, Eitan Thomas. Eitan, how did it take me this long to have you on the podcast? I guess that's the first question.
I don't know. We've been talking over the years for a while, yeah. But it's good to be here.
Thank you. Now, I've interviewed you for stories. I've been on your podcast, a radio show, everything else. Somehow, I had not had you on the crossover yet. Glad to rectify that. This morning, though we have had to navigate some technical difficulties, we don't have video this morning. That's okay. We can hear each other. Before we jump into all things Robert Sarver and what a thicket that is, you and I had talked over the last couple of days. I know you've been a busy sports dad this week with volleyball matches for your daughter. How'd the volleyball match go last night? Did you successfully bring the right snacks? how did that all go?
Well, actually, my wife took over of the snacks. So that's basically what happened. So, you know, sometimes wives gives you a job to do and they'd be like, just forget it. I'll do it myself. And then they so the snack situation went great. It's fun. You know, my daughter's playing volleyball. My son's playing basketball. So, you know, they're in preseason now, but my daughter's in the pit of everything. So it's just, you know, it's fun seeing them.
How does it work for a sports dad when you spent so much of your own life and career as a professional athlete at a very high level? Do you think it changes or influences it any way the way you actually, whether it's the way you cheered for your kids or whether just how things go? We always hear all these nightmares about sports parents and everything. Are you looking around at some of the other ones like, folks, get a grip? This is not even, you know, at the level of what I used to do. Like, how does it influence you as a sports dad?
Well, I coached my son for a lot of years when he was younger. So I got a chance to experience the parents. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to be one of those parents.
Yeah.
So that kind of helps with, you know, me and my wife's attitude and everything like that while we're in the stands. Because, I mean, you could write a whole book off of youth sports parents. And, you know, my son, you know, he played soccer and basketball. You know, my girls played tennis and, you know, volleyball. So it's across sports. What I'm saying is there is no difference. There's fanatics in all the parents. And it's interesting. You know, parents, they take it to a whole other level. But it's fun just seeing them, to be honest with you.
That's great. And it sounds like you were a very involved sports dad, too. So that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, with regard to Sarver, you and I have already talked this week a couple times because we chatted on your show with you and Dave Zirin, and we obviously have a pretty good feel for where each other is on this. But let me try to kind of recontextualize this for the purposes of this discussion, which is this. You were a player in the NBA for about a decade. You were an officer with the Players Association as well. So your perspective on this is a little different because I think you can put yourself in the shoes of NBA players, the Suns players, everything else. So I'm going to get to that in a second about let's think about how what you would do or what it would be like. Let me just ask it broadly first, though. Just your feeling as a former player, when you see the way this unfolded this week from the report that was issued to Adam Silver's decision, how did you just generally feel about the way the NBA handled it?
I mean, you know, we talked about this a little bit. You know, I would have liked to see things done a lot differently. I had a lot of issues with it. Like, for one, I didn't understand why it took so long. Like, what, you know, this report came out back in, you know, November. And, you know, I understand due diligence, but good Lord, you know what I mean? I mean, like, this should have been sped up. I mean, and going through the process, especially with the union, you know, seeing it this long drag out, I'm like, okay, they're just racking up billable hours. And you know what I mean? I mean, it's a really long time for it to be drawn out. I think one of the things that kind of not really surprised me. So I listened to, you know, Frank A. Sola and Brian Scalabrine in the morning when I dropped my kids off to school. Cause it's, you know, Sirius XM, you know, just put something on, I'm listening to them. And it was interesting listening to, you know, Scalabrine, because it happened again this morning, you know, kind of, I want to say maybe discount, maybe deflect and kind of defend, excuse Robert Sarver and, you know, kind of do the, I don't think he's racist, you know, just because he said the N-word five times and, you know, the what about isms, like what if LeBron said something? Are we going to kick him out of the league too? And, you know, the locker room talk, like that we heard a lot with, you know, the selection with Trump, like, oh, it's just locker room talk. And I heard a lot of people agreeing with that. And I was like, okay, well, I disagree with every caller that called into here. Like, what? You know what I mean? Like, how are we excusing it as locker room talk? Like, it's just the way things are. And, you know, just discounting it. Ah, it could have been worse. You could have said, I'm like, yeah, but that doesn't make it right. So that was a little bit surprising these last 3 days, because it's kind of been the same narrative. And to your point, which you made yesterday on my show, there wasn't the same public outcry as there was with Donald Sterling. It was literally apples and oranges. But if you compare the two as to the, you know, what actually happened, it's, you know, in my opinion, what Sarver did was a lot worse. I mean, you know, you have Sterling with, you know, sounding like a jealous boyfriend who has a little bit of a complex with black men, and you know what I mean? But if that's all we're looking at, what happened with Sterling and the reason why he had to sell his team in the uproar, and you look at everything that happened with Sarver, it's like, wait a minute, you're going over two decades and, you know, not a safe work environment, and all these different people were interviewed, and, you know, all these different things, he's pulling somebody's pants down in the middle, all these different weird things. And I'm like, I don't even know if you could compare the two. But yeah. But then at the same time, the public outcry and outrage are two different levels to your point that you made with me yesterday. So I think that really influenced. I mean, you convinced me yesterday that influenced the NBA's reaction because of the lack of public outcry. If we saw the same thing that we saw with Donald Sterling, I think you might have seen a different Adam Silver at the press conference, you know, different disposition, different punishment, different everything. So I think all of that played into it.
Yeah. I truly believe that, Etan. Like, I feel like to the extent that Adam's job is at least quasi-political as commissioner, you know, you've got all these different constituencies, but you have to deal with the public as one of them. And yeah, if there were more pressure on him leading up to this, if there had been more of a public outcry, if sponsors were fleeing and all that stuff, I think it's perhaps a different outcome. To your view of this, is it just, you know, if the punishment's insufficient, a 1-year suspension and $10 million fine, which was the max that he could levy within the league bylaws, what was the outcome you would have liked to see? Were you looking at this the whole time, starting with Baxter Holmes' story last November, thinking this is it, he's just got to go? Is it as simple as that to you, that Sarver just should be gone?
Well, yeah. I mean, because if you tolerate it, then you're going to have duplications of it. I mean, then, you know, what are the, and we already had different things of, you know, everything that came out with Mark Cuban before. And of course, he, you know, that wasn't directly with him, but it was still his organization and, you know, the work environment. So then you have to look at, okay, NBA, you know, if you're going to be this progressive league, and if you're going to be this league that, you know, preaches that you're, you know, accepting of all people, promoting of women, promoting of, you know, all races and everything like that, you got to kind of practice what you preach, right? So if you have an environment of one of the teams that is the opposite of that, then you have to deal with it. You know what I mean? And I don't think that they dealt with it in the way they should have, because when he comes back in a year, when Sarver comes back in a year, then what's going to happen? You know, I mean, you know, it's almost like, you know, I have, using a kid's analogy, you have kids and you're like, okay, if you do something wrong again, then I'm going to take your phone away, but you don't ever take the phone away. You know what I mean? Or if you do something wrong again, now you're on notice. And it's like, okay, after a while, it's like you're bluffing. So it's like you can't just keep excusing these instances or giving what I would equate to a slap on the wrist. People, you know, I saw some people saying, wow, well, he did get fined $10 million. I'm like, well, he's a billionaire. So you know what I mean? It's not quite the same. And then he gets a kind of a vacation here. You know, I mean, yeah, is it going to hurt him not to be able to sit in the seats during the game and get the camera time and bring his friends? Okay, maybe, but that's it? Then you come back after a year and everything. So what's going to happen to all the employees who are still there who had to break their NDAs with the lawyers that the NBA, you know what I mean, you know, hired to be able to interview them? What, they're just supposed to go back to work like nothing happened? The ones that are still current employees? And they're not going to feel any type of, you know, backlash because they're the ones that were the whistleblowers? Like, come on, you know how it works. So yeah. I don't know if this rectified anything.
I guess Adam Silver would say, as he said at the press conference the other day, that, you know, a lot of these incidents were many, many years ago. They've cleaned up the organization. They've, you know, made changes. And Robert Sarver himself has, you know, I don't know, evolved is probably too strong a word, but he has adjusted his behavior, I suppose. I think that would be the league's stance, is that it's not the same environment as a lot of the incidents in the report suggested it was in the past. So that's a lot of benefit of the doubt that you and I and others would have to extend, though, and only the employees themselves really know whether that feels safe there. And you make a great point, Etan, that a lot of people either had to break their NDAs, or even if they didn't have NDAs, even if they were just employees who wanted to confirm, corroborate some of these stories to the investigators, even if you're being assured of anonymity, of your identity being kept private, it always feels risky to be in that position, to be a whistleblower, essentially, on the most powerful person in your organization, the guy who owns the team.
Right.
And so a lot of people have, one, been put through a lot emotionally and otherwise, having their job security threatened by implication, if not directly, and then taking the risk of speaking to investigators, never knowing for sure, well, what if somebody finds out? And so I not enough has probably been said by all of us about the employees and former employees and the effect on them, because, you know, I've talked to some. I know that their people are absolutely furious and really disappointed and kind of crushed that Sarver did not get a more severe punishment from the league. It feels like they put themselves out there not for nothing, but not for enough. And this is not the outcomes that certainly these hundreds of employees who spoke to the investigators wanted to see. I can't speak for obviously hundreds of employees. The people who were most affected, let's just say, by these incidents of sexism, potentially racism, depending on how people want to view that, and general, you know, just bullying, just abusive behavior. And so I, you know, my heart does go out to those folks, because I cannot imagine having to sit back and watch this week and think, well, nothing's happened. He's still going to own this team. He's still potentially going to treat people this way.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see what else, you know, would happen when he comes back. So that's the part that was disappointing. But you made a good point as well to me yesterday that, you know, it doesn't have to be all on the players. So, of course, you know, that's the first instance where everybody say, well, the players were a little bit too quiet about it. And I think that's a great point, but I don't like it to be all on the players. It's not the players' job to be able to, you know what I mean? That's kind of the commissioner's job and the rest of the governors to make sure the way the setup is for them to be able to keep each other in line. But then you have to ask, well, is it kind of like a boys' club? Like, you know, are they supposed to police each other when they're all buddies and they all kind of want to, you know, is that the right setup? Should they have a, you know, should it be just in their hands to be able to vote? Like, is that the right setup? Like, should they all have to agree, you know, for one of them to be outed, you know, or to be reprimanded? Should they all have to agree? Should that be part of the equation? So these are questions that I think deserve examining. I mean, because we've seen in different setups, and I, you know, of course, completely different, but we've seen with police departments where they investigate themselves and they come back and they say, well, we did nothing wrong, so we're going to continue as, you know, as planned. And that's not a good system. You need to have somebody else checking up on them. You know what I mean? Who's going to police them? So,
yeah. I mean, that's the thing, too. So Adam Silver has the full authority. He doesn't need the Board of Governors, the other owners, to tell him it's okay to suspend. He can do that on his own, and he could have gone further than a year, and he chose not to. The $10 million fine, again, he does not need permission from the Board of Governors for any of that. But to your point, Yes, the Board of Governors ultimately controls whether Adam Silver can throw down the ultimate punishment, which is to expel you from the league, to force a sale or to do a lifetime suspension, or, you know, anything that is going to potentially trigger legal action by the expelled owner, because obviously they're not going to sit still for it. Now the rest of the owners are involved because it's their money when the whole league is being sued, right? So there are limits there, but you're someone who I know you have a relationship with Adam Silver. You've interviewed him for your book. I think you guys have shared a stage at an event or a conference or something too. Like, you know him fairly well. And like a lot of us who have watched Adam over the years, like, he earned a lot of praise for his handling of Donald Sterling. He earned a lot of praise during the George Floyd and Black Lives Matter movement of a couple of years ago and the way that the league handled that. Does your opinion of Adam Silver change based on what happened and what didn't happen with the saga, or the Sarver saga?
Well, mine doesn't. I still have, you know, a lot of respect for him. I still view him, you know, the way I viewed it, but I just don't like the setup. I don't think it's a good setup. Even in watching him during the press conference, and it's, you know, deferring to them, and, you know, it's that he works for them. And yes, he has, you know, the power to do certain things, but he kept kind of referencing in different ways that, you know, kind of there's only so much I can do. So then I just don't like the setup where the Board of Governors have to govern themselves. I kind of feel like there should be an outside somebody that has to govern them. You know what I mean? It's a setup where you have to have accountability. And I don't know if having them hold each other accountable is the right setup.
Yeah.
But as far as Adam Silver, you know, well, look, he is a lot different than David Stern. And that you saw that as soon as he, you know, came into the position as commissioner. And, you know, the tone is still different, but I think a lot of people were left wondering, and kind of scratching their heads from the press conference about the different Adam Silver that we saw Wednesday, than what we saw with Donald Sterling. And they almost looked like two different people. You know, after Donald Sterling, and I'm sure people revisited the link, you know, after he, you know, said he was so forceful and so, you know, I'm going to ban him for life and this is not going to be something that we tolerate in our league. And he talked about the people in the past and it would be disrespectful to them to be able to allow, like, all of this stuff. And you put it into context when you said everything else that was going on around, like the pressure from the players, the pressure from, you know, the pretty much all of society, sponsors, uproar, the middle of the playoffs, everything like that. So circumstances are definitely important to look at. But there was a definite difference Adam Silver. And so I think he's going to have to kind of, I don't want to say earn back his good name. That might be a little bit too strong, but I think he lost a lot of people with the way that this was handled.
Yeah.
And who are not worried about the circumstances, not worried about all of that stuff. You know what I mean? I mean, you laid it out perfectly, but a lot of people not worried about all that. You know, they put Adam Silver different as David Stern, different as Roger Goodell, different. So he's supposed to act differently. And so I do think that, you know, it makes people kind of wonder, well, was everything that we saw in the bubble kind of, you know, performance? Like, was it, you know, how much did it? You know, people are going to start questioning that. So, yeah, I do think he's going to have to, I don't know a better way to say it, but yes, earn back his good name with a lot of people throughout society.
Let me ask you this, because I'm just curious, because I assume as when things like this happen, Etan, you're, you know, a former player, so you do have a unique lens to view this through that is maybe a little different than me or any of us who have not played in the league. you know, look, there's a reality. Not everybody who owns an NBA team is probably on their best behavior all the time, or maybe the best people, or we may not agree with them on a lot of different things, but there's a reality. They own the teams, they sign the checks, and there's a lot of just, you know, peace you have to make with yourself in this world. By the way, in my walk of life too, right? I haven't agreed with everything every company I've ever worked for has done or stood for. We all have to kind of just, you know, make our way in the world, understanding that, these things exist. All that said, NBA is a little bit different. I was just curious, just as a former player, if you were to put yourself in the shoes of Chris Paul and Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, the rest of the Suns players, the rest of those guys right now, what would you be feeling if you were a player on that roster? We're less than 2 weeks now, I think, to media day and training camps opening. They're going to be asked about this starting on day one. Sarver won't be around, but he still owns the team. They know he's going to be back, it probably in his courtside seat in a year. What do you think you'd be feeling if you were a Suns player, or maybe even any NBA player right now?
I mean, I think I would be feeling exactly what the vice chairman, the minority owner, Jeff? I can't pronounce his last name.
Yeah, and I don't have it in front of me either. I would
feel the same way that he felt. He wrote a open letter, to, I guess, his employees and players, and he had the reaction from, you know, everything from the punishment, and everything. And that's how I would feel. I mean, I think he was kind of calling for Sarver to resign, and I would join him with that. Mm. That for me, if you're asking for me personally now, yeah. You know, I can't say that that's what Chris Paul should do. I'm not saying that, or that's what Devin Booker should do. But the question was, if I was in that situation, what would be my response? And that would be my response, to join him in that call for his resignation. It's hard to justify somebody doing in the atmosphere and just continuing on, after a year and coming back like nothing happened. Like, if you're going to start all over and set the tone and say, okay, this is what we stand for, you have to make some type of corrections. Now, there might be some more corrections being made. You know what I mean? He might put somebody in a place, kind of like what Mark Cuban did, you know, who is over this, and they say, okay, we're going to have a new culture. Something needs to be done. But it can't be just him coming back and like, okay, I'm back now. I didn't serve my time. And, you know, it can't be like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's tough because, again, it isn't the player's job to have to be able to correct the entire atmosphere of the organization. That should not be their job. You know what I mean?
Agreed. But they're also the most powerful constituency outside of the team owners themselves, right? So
100% agree, and I understand their power, but still, it shouldn't be on them to be able to move the needle.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it should be a collective.
Yeah.
So you should have other people. You should have other governors, you know, saying, which is not going to happen because they all stand on one accord, which is why, you know, when you have CBA negotiations, why, you know, they're so effective, because they don't speak out against each other.
Yeah.
But you should have other governors saying that is not something that is acceptable in our league.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? You should have other. So it should not just the players, but a whole collective of people associated with the NBA, yeah. You know, to be able to make that stand.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's, you know, there's moments like this where you do the hypothetical. I wonder what would happen if we gave certain folks truth serum and could hear their real feelings, because, and not to put the added pressure or responsibility on any of these folks either, but there are members of the Board of Governors who are Black. There are members of the Board of Governors who are women. And you certainly kind of wonder what some of them were feeling as they read through the report about their peer, Robert Sarver, who they're in these Board of Governors meetings with, and who they've discussed policy with, and who they are now on some level, even though it wasn't formally being asked to judge and decide his punishment. Because again, it was Adam Silver alone in this case. But when you're at least thinking about, as a fellow governor on that board, is there something else we should be doing? I do wonder how all of them felt. You know, and obviously the white men too, but especially if you're a woman reading, seeing some of the things that Robert Sarver did and said to his female employees, I do wonder.
I agree with you, but after the last election and seeing the amount of, you know, percentage of white women who voted for Trump, especially after everything that came out, you know, right before the elections, as far as the, you know, sexual, not even just harassment or not just, you know, misconduct, but sexual, like, you know, abuse. Like, it when you saw that number of people, of white women in particular, still vote for him, nothing surprises me.
Fair point. That one hurt, but yes, fair point. So let me bring this back to the Players Association side of this. Tamika Tramaglio, the new executive director, put out a pretty strong statement on Twitter the other night, the same time that around the same time that Chris Paul and LeBron James put out statements on Twitter. So there's a little bit more outcry now publicly from very important, influential people on the players' side. You know, LeBron and Chris Paul, for sure, and then the Players Association through their executive director. You were on the board of the union for many years. What should be the union's role at a time like this? Should they be, again, it's not fair that the players have this pressure on them, but they have more ability to move the needle than any media pundit, any fans, almost anybody aside from maybe the corporate sponsors. Is there anything you think that they should be doing or you would like to see happen in the weeks and months to come? You know, because this thing doesn't have to be over. I wrote this the other day. This is not necessarily the end. It could be just the beginning, because we're just now starting to see players speak out against Sarver in a forceful way. What should be the union's role and the players' role from here?
You know, it's kind of like making up for lost time of what, you know, should have been the role leading up to this when the article first came out last November, and putting the pressure. So basically everything that everyone did with Sterling should have been duplicated, because that's what worked. Of course, hindsight, you know what I mean? Everything like that. But yeah, I'm telling you, you convinced me with how you explained it, because you're right that when you have that pressure, then things change. There wasn't any pressure. It was almost like, you know, whatever happened to that situation with Sarver? You know what I mean? Like, nobody even heard about it. I mean, even when he was describing the atmosphere of the press conference and comparing it to the atmosphere with the Sterling press conference, it's night and day. There was no, you know, mass of media all from all around the country there and packed. And, you know, that wasn't the situation. So drumming up that level of, you know, outrage is important. Now, yes, I think there was a great point that you made, that there was no smoking gun. There was no audio, you know, and it's unfortunate that it would have to take that in order for it to affect people as much. But that's the way that it is. I mean, you look at it with, you know, police brutality cases. When there's video of it, it's different than if somebody hears about this, what happened, and a policeman did this. It's completely different when there's video. And that's just the reality. But as far as drumming up the outrage, I think now, you know, everybody should look in the mirror and make up for lost time. You know, everybody that doesn't agree with what happened, as far as the outcome of the punishment, I always put punishment in quotations because I don't really, you know, view that as a real punishment. They should really join the, you know, I got to look up his name real quick so I can pronounce his name right.
Sure.
You know, join him in calling for Robert Sarver's resignation. So imagine if you have, you know, all these players now taking a step further. So not, you know, on one accord, you know, and not just LeBron and Chris Paul, but all players all across the league, saying, no, we're calling for his resignation. We respect it all. Even when LeBron tweeted, he was like, you can see the respect that they have for Adam Silver. You know what I mean? It was like, however, he got it wrong in this one. You know, that's what the Bucks said. You know, all the respect I have for him in the world, but he got it wrong. So now take it a step further. You know, all the players, you know, and the different people, you know, joined them in calling for his resignation. Start drumming up a lot of the outrage and the way that it was drummed up with Donald Sterling.
Yeah. And I think that that could still have an impact. I really do. I don't know if that's what will happen. But it's, you know, this isn't the legal system. There's no double jeopardy rules here. If there's enough pressure on the league, Adam Silver, the board of governors, can still do something different. Also, by the way, Robert Sarver himself could, not suggesting that this would happen based on what we know of the man, but he could just decide to step down. He could just decide to divest his majority stake and either drop down to minority stake, so somebody else is the face of the franchise and he's just got a smaller share, or he could divest entirely. And it's not really that big of a punishment considering that he will make a just ludicrously massive profit in the hundreds of millions of dollars. So it's he could just choose to do the right thing and step away without the league having to act and make this so formal. I don't expect it, but it's I want to throw that out there, that it is just in the realm of possibility out there. Let me ask you this, Eitan, because you alluded to this earlier when you were talking about some of the talk shows you've listened to and the way that people have sometimes, you know, rationalized some of this behavior. I want to ask you about Sarver's use of the N-word, because the investigation concluded and Adam Silver chose not to address this. Like, he was asked about it, but he didn't really say whether he agreed or disagreed. He simply said, I accept the conclusions of the investigation of the law firm with regard to the way that Sarver used the N-word at least 5 times. And even after having been told as early as 2004, you as a white man should not be repeating that word, even if you're just repeating someone else's use of it. This was the investigation's conclusion. That it, quote, makes no finding that Sarver used the N-word with the intent to demean or denigrate. I'm curious if you have thoughts on just simply that. The man said the word multiple times, even after being told it was inappropriate and was making people uncomfortable and that he shouldn't be using it, even as someone just repeating somebody else's story. But they still say no intent to demean or denigrate. What was your thought on just that framing?
I didn't like it, to be honest with you. That's the position that I heard Brian Scalabrine take for the last 3 days, as far as like he's just repeating it. You know, so I was like, well, you know, I would say, you know, my grandfather, if he was still here, he would tell you there is no such thing as a non-racist way for a white person to say the N-word. Because of the history of it and what he had to go through and how it was used on him throughout his entire life. There's no such thing. So it's, you can't, you know, say that. And then he started talking about, well, they say it in rap lyrics, they say it in the movies, they say that has nothing to do with anything, you know, like nothing. And it's an insulting correlation for a white person to even make, knowing the history of the word. And you just have to look at it in the terms of, you know, comparing it to another group. So say you have somebody from the LGBT community and there's different phrases that they use, you know, and I've even said, I was like, well, I thought that was derogatory. But that's the way that they either want to reclaim it. They, you know, they say queer. They say, you know, when I was growing up, somebody said queer. Those are like, that's like a derogatory term.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But now it's different. So would I say, okay, well, me as a heterosexual man, I want to be able to say that too. And the person from the LGBT community says, no, it's different when you say it. You cannot say that as a hetero man. The way that it was, you know, that, and I'm forcing it to say, no, I just want to say it. I want to say it over and over again. So that's what happened with Sarver. Or Watson said, wait a minute, you can't say that. That's not appropriate for you to say. And he just kept saying, well, I want to say it again. I want to say it anyway. I don't care. That is adding insult to injury.
Yeah.
So it's not something that you can, you know, with people trying to dismiss it as, oh, he was just repeating something. No, let's look at the full context of it. He can't repeat it. If somebody is telling you it means something different when you say it, I'm asking you not to say it.
Yeah.
And you in turn are saying, I want to say it anyway because I want to be able to say what I want to say. Then you are weaponizing the word. And even though I take the position that I don't think anyone should say the N-word, I listen to clean versions of rap music just because I'm not as much as to hear the not cussing, just not to hear the N-word. So I have that position that nobody should say it. However, it does mean something completely different coming from a white person.
Yes.
And we can't pretend as if they're the same thing. Yeah. So I just find that whole rationale just completely insulting, completely insulting to my grandfather, completely insulting to every black person from our previous generations that had to have that word hurled at them and could do nothing about it. You know what I mean? Of using it to demean them and using to oppress them. I mean, it's disrespectful to them. So, you know, and I don't know if a lot of white people who make that argument understand or fully understand that. And you have to make a comparison to another group to try to help them understand. Do you know what I mean? So that would be my position with that. And I'm hearing it over and over again. Like, oh, okay, well, it's not really racist. It's kind of, you know, he was just repeating, like, well, you are simplifying something that should not be simplified.
Yeah. I think people are trying to find a different framework or variety of definitions or levels, right? Like, well, if you use the N-word to address somebody in an insulting or aggressive way, then, well, clearly that's a racist use of it. But if you're just repeating it, and I get that on some level, if you're ignorant of how potent, powerful, and just off. It's not the word you should use if you're in that station, right? But when somebody has now told you, listen, right. And doesn't matter how old you are, I don't want to hear the excuse of like, he's 60 something. It should not take more than once for somebody to explain to you that this is not something, not a word you should use, even if you're just saying that somebody else said it.
Right.
Once that's been explained to you, that's it. The onus that's is on you it, to
right?
to of listen. Course.
Yes.
And so so it's interesting, Eitan. Like I read this report and one of the incidents where he's using the word was, and this was the one that's about Draymond Green, and of course the report doesn't know that it's Draymond Green, but we know that it is from previous reporting by Baxter Holmes at ESPN. And Sarver bursts into his office in October 2016 after this game against the Warriors, and he says, quote, and I'm reading from the report, why does, and it says the Warriors player, but basically why does Draymond Green get to say N-word, 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 after the coach, who was Earl Watson, said, you can't fucking say that. Sarver replied, I can't say N-word, N-word, N-word. And there's right. a witness who saw this, and so they've corroborated it. And I will just say this. I understand that lawyers writing a lawyerly report investigation, and Adam Silver as a lawyer reading that, if you don't see anything that specifically speaks to Robert Sarver being racist, and you're saying that legally you cannot conclude what's, you know, as people say, what's in his heart, that kind of thing. Okay, I kind of get that as a legal definition. But I will just say, as a person who has lived in the world, anytime I've heard a white person angry that they can't use the N-word
right.
and repeating it and saying, well, if black people can use it, why can't I use it? If you're outraged as a white person that you're not allowed to use it, that it does have a different definition and conveys a different sentiment by using it, even repeating it, if you're mad that you can't use it, then I absolutely question what you're really about. And that's the thing that I think leapt off the pages when I'm reading them about Sarver. It's not just that he tripped up, he used a word he shouldn't have used, and it was in the context of repeating what somebody else... Like, no, you're mad that you can't use it.
Yes.
Why is that?
Right.
Like, right. That's the part that really jumped out to me. And again, I can't sit here and say for sure, oh, this makes the man a racist, but whatever there is along the spectrum between anti-racist, non-racist, racist, you're a lot closer to the racism than not if you are offended that you can't use the N-word as a white person. I don't even know how you can get to that point and that he can say that out loud multiple times.
And that's why I use the example with the LGBT community. If I'm trying to use a word that I've heard you use on each other, and you tell me, wait a minute, is different coming from you. That is offensive. Please don't do it.
Yes.
Now, if from that point, I continue to push to want to do it and say it again and everything like that, from the first point, you could claim ignorance. After you're told, you can't claim that anymore.
Yes.
And that's the problem with Sarver. If he said it the one time and then, you know, Earl Watson or whoever told him, wait, you can't say that. And he said, okay, my bad. And then it stopped there. Then that's one thing. But he continued. This is in the reports. He continued after saying it over again. I want to do it again. And he's telling you, wait, you can't do that. He's like, no, I want to do it. That's a totally different thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And at that point, it's fair for us to question. And, you know, it's different court of public opinion, you and I talking about it and what we perceive of somebody who takes that position and keeps saying that word is different than the court of opinion in a legal setting or maybe even in a board of governors setting and deciding whether or not it rises to the level of being able to expel somebody from your league and whether you can then legally defend it once the legal challenges come from that person. And I get that. And I understand, intellectually, I understand why the investigators, the law firm framed it the way they did and said we could not conclude racial animus or gender animus or, you know, sexism animus along gender lines. I get it in terms if it's in legalese, but in terms of common sense, just human reaction, reading on the page what he did and said along those lines, it's really hard to walk away and say, oh, there's no animus there. Because then why are you continually repeating it? And why are you basically, you know, threatening the livelihoods of women working for you by citing their pregnancies and all this? Like, at some point, how is animus not somehow part of the equation? And I get it. Legal definitions are different than common sense definitions for you and me. But it's, I just don't see how anybody could walk away and think that there's not something else going on there.
I agree 100%.
Yeah, it's wild. Eitan, this has been great. Before I let you go, we are a couple weeks out from training camps, so give me just go one basketball question.
Okay,
give me just one player or one team that is going to be the one that intrigues you most for the coming season.
Nets. Definitely the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah.
I want to see what Kyrie does. I want to see how they all work together. I want to see how Ben Simmons fits into the whole equation. You know, when he's coming down, playing the point, if he's, you know, the different switch of positions that they can, you know, the weapons that they have, you know, I'm really interested in seeing them all put it all together. They have a tremendous amount of talent. And I just want to see it all put together. That's it. You know, it seems almost like if they would have broken up everything and traded KD and Kyrie would have left, it would almost been like, you know, like NBA fans would have been cheated. Because we didn't get a chance to see them all together, you know what I mean, for a full season. So that's who I'm really going to be paying attention to and watching a lot this season.
Yeah, for sure. And of course, that's my backyard. I will surely be at Media Day in a couple of weeks to see what they all have to say for the first time that they're actually standing in front of microphones or sitting in front of microphones and have to talk about this very, very strange offseason. And they're all still together, at least for now. And yeah, I'm with you. It's they are the classic on paper team, right? Like everything looks good. It looks like this talent alone, they should be really potent. They should be able to make a run to the finals. But there's so much other just weird shit that's happened that you just don't know how to gauge it. Eitan, this has been great, man. Glad we finally got you on the crossover. Thank you so much for the time. Appreciate it. We'll do it again.
Sounds good. It was a great conversation. Definitely appreciate it.
Appreciate you. Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Eitan Thomas. Thanks to our producer, Shelby Royston. Thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. Hit me with all your feedback on Twitter, @HowardBeck.
at Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.